coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
The 109th American International Toy Fair wrapped up this week in New York. The event is the largest toy trade show in the Western Hemisphere. The show brings together more than 1,000 exhibitors from around the world to showcase an estimated 100,000 toy and entertainment products. According to the Toy Industry Association, or TIA, that runs the event, the biggest trends this year are toys that connect, glow, teach, wow, and hit a high note with kids of all ages.
Hey, a big trend at Toy Fair, things that glow in the dark. Now over here, I'm going to show you something neat. It looks like an appliance, but it is the digital light designer from Crayola. And you know, sometimes robots just want to get down and get funky. This is Disco Robo. He's coming in the fall, and he's going to be under 50 bucks.
Is she up there?
Okay, I'm up at Mattel. This is Barbie. I'm not interested in... Wait a minute. I just saw my picture.
That's right.
What is this?
This is our photo fashion Barbie doll. She's a standalone Barbie and digital camera in one.
Wow. And how many pictures can she store?
100 pictures, and you can customize those pictures with 15 preloaded graphics.
Hey, this is Wall Tracks. This won Best Boy Toy of 2011. You know, you don't have room in the living room for a track. This whole thing hangs on the wall. So now the cars go up an elevator. They run down. Look at this, these cars jumping this track. There's a saw here that could cut you off. Now the very, very basic track starts at under $40. So there it is, Wall Tracks. It's a fall release. You've heard of the generation gap? Well, at Toy Fair, there's something called Generation App, where toys and apps are meeting. We're at Appfinity, and this is an Appfinity toy. This is App Drive. So, you know, you can play these games on your iPod or your Android, but now with the steering wheel, you get a much better effect of driving. And there are sensors in here that are moving, that are sending signals to the game. So it makes playtime a lot more fun. And the neat thing is, this is gonna be under 20 bucks. You supply your own digital device, but it'll be out in the fall. It's pretty nifty. Kids really will love it. Dick DiBartolo, the GizWiz for World News Now.
That was a tech roundup of the International Toy Fair held in New York this week. Adrian Appel, TIA's in-house trend expert, says toy makers innovate to keep up with the latest trends, from pop culture to technology, because they know that kids want to be part of what's going on around them. Economic and birth rate data are used to determine price points and product lines, which accounts for the prevalence this year of big-ticket items and toys for infants and preschool children. Even in this digital age, there are just some toys that last. Take, for instance, Play-Doh. The story of how this simple product came about is rather interesting and has an unsung heroine. It all started back in 1954 when Kay Zufall was running a nursery school. Kay was looking for cheap materials for her kids to make Christmas decorations. She read in a magazine that you could use wallpaper cleaner for the task. Her brother-in-law, Joseph McVicker, just so happened to work for Kutal, a failing Cincinnati-based soap company that made such a product. Their non-toxic cleaner had become obsolete but would find a new life in this kid's product. To make a long story short, a few modifications were made to the wallpaper cleaner, detergent was removed, almond scent and some coloring were added, and voila, Kutal's Rainbow Modeling Compound. Of course, Kay thought that was a horrible name, so she redubbed it Play-Doh, as she recounts in this trailer for the documentary Toyland.
Toyland, Toyland. When we first had Slinky, we were so concerned that it was a fad.
But I think if it were, it's one of the oldest fads around.
We're creating upside down chin characters for some play kits.
This is the last photo shoot before my pitch to Hasbro next week, so they need to look good.
I want an inventor to show me something that makes me go, wow.
Look at me.
All right.
So it's an interactive toy that kids can use to create their own characters.
This is my second year in development on Crazy Chins, and I've never spent this much time developing anything.
It's Bling Bling. It's based on a popular CeeLo dice game.
I'm with Solid Build a Game.
This is Yakko Ball.
Junk Ball.
Thumb Ball.
Yamoto. Blongo.
I'm looking to do about $15 million a year.
My goal when I designed the game was to get a reaction.
Careful if you touch the sides.
In any case, they said, call it Play-Doh.
I thought it was very funny. At that age, you think false teeth are funny.
She said, toy designer? Well, what kind of toys did you design? I said, well, my favorite was a toy called Light Bright. She said, Light Bright? I used to love that when I was a kid.
I love this business.
In 1956, Joe McVicker with his uncle Noah McVicker, the creator of the original wallpaper cleaner, formed a company, Rainbow Crafts of Cincinnati, to market Play-Doh. It was only available in one color and one size, off-white, in a one-pound can, but it was a hit. By 1960, they had added the Fun Factory accessory to the product line. They were awarded a patent in 1965 and were purchased by General Mills. Play-Doh changed hands several times and is now owned by Hasbro. Unfortunately, Kay never received credit or compensation for her role in the invention. Our show today is about reinvention, repurposing, rethinking, making what's old new again, especially when it comes to toys. Our guests today are masters of reinvention, but on a startup scale. Our first guest is Susan Chase of Hoop Delight. She's a Pilates expert and an exercise boot camp leader. Hearing people complain about getting dirty at her outdoor boot camps, she came up with the Click and Go mat. Out of that idea sprung the Hoop Tote. She's a big hula hoop fan, but found she couldn't take it everywhere she wanted to go. So first she invented a collapsible hula hoop, and then to go with it, a backpack-like tote to carry it. Also joining us today is Carrie Erickson Valenzuela. Taking a cue from the Play-Doh folks, Carrie has developed her own line of modeling clay. Mama Kay, as she is known, wanted to avoid the artificial ingredients in cloying fruit and soda scents frequently marketed to children, so she came up with her own line of scented clay. Her company is Mama Kay's Aromatic Play Clay. Pretty crafty, I'd say. We'll have more about inventing toy products today on Minding Your Business, but first, a blast from the past.
It's the new Shoop Shoop Hula Hoop with a sound inside.
Oh, it's a Shoop Shoop Hula Hoop Hoop. Oh, the Shoop Shoop, it's in the hoop hoop. Let's try one, now try two, let's try three, and you'll see. Oh, it's a Shoop Shoop.
More on hula hoops later. As we heard in our little spot there from, I think, the 1950s, hula hooping is actually hot once again. The American Council on Exercise has found that hula hooping burns about as many calories as step aerobics and cardio kickboxing, 420 calories an hour. Our next guest, Susan Chase, is a certified Pilates instructor and the founder of Hoop Delight. She's riding this new fitness trend with a line of collapsible fitness hoops. Here to tell us how she's getting her products into the hands of celebrities and more, Susan Chase. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Hi again. Thank you so much for having me here.
Where did your ideas come from for your first products?
Well, I saw the need for a hula hoop to be able to go wherever you wanted to go. But they're so big, so... just break it down and collapse it. But
I noticed on your website you were talking about how do you get it into the overhead bin?
Yeah, you have to collapse it down, right? Because then it'll fit in there perfectly. It's fine.
So how did you come up with the idea of how to make it collapsible? What was going through your mind?
Well, I think there's, it's a grassroots, it was a grassroots sport about 6 years ago across the country. And people were making hoops and selling it at the local farmers markets or just at the park, And there were a few of us that were making collapsible hoops. But my issue was, not only does it collapse, but how do you contain it so that you can actually carry it so it's not opening up on you? And it's the strap that was my invention. So I have a patented hoop tote.
You actually have a patent?
I have a patent, yeah. So I came up with the idea for a way to hold a yoga mat, and then it evolved into the hula hoop, the collapsible hula hoop. And it took about 3 years for that patent to get issued, but I do have a patent for that.
So you didn't start with a provisional patent? You went right for the full patent?
No, provisional first.
Why don't you explain a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's a process, so you have to pay a lot of money. And
even for the provisional?
Yeah.
That's a little cheaper than a full-on patent, though,
It is, but once they do all the research to make sure that there isn't prior art, that no one else has submitted a patent before, then you can go forth with it. And so that at maybe the 1.5-2 year mark is when I decided just to go for it.
Go for the full patent.
Yeah, so it's a lot of waiting. There's not a lot that you can do except for, you know, get the drawings. And then my patent attorney, you know, had her people make the regular technical drawings of it. And then we just submitted everything. And then the patent officer has to make sure it's okay. So
we're here with Susan Chase of Hoop Delight, and we'll be back talking about a little bit more about how she got her patent for her collapsible hula hoop.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
We've been speaking with Susan Chase of Hoop Delight about her products and how she started off and how she got them patented. And she didn't really patent the hula hoop, obviously, because that's owned by Wham-O, but she developed a carrying device for the product. So let's continue with our discussion. So you were working with a patent attorney.
Yes.
And they got the drawings made for you.
Yes.
And then where'd you go from there?
Then from there, I just had to wait until my patent was issued. And it was issued summer of 2011, so just last year. So I filed it in 2008, and it took that whole time.
But you were selling product in the meantime?
I was selling product in the meantime, yeah.
So how do you actually make your product? Do you do it?
By hand.
Oh, you
all
do?
By hand.
You make them all yourself?
Yeah. So, you know, I get the tubing material. I, you know, have a vendor to supply the colorful tapes. I tape it up.
That's what goes around the hula hoop itself.
Yeah, to make it decorative.
Okay.
It's all custom made, so people have choices of whatever colors they want and whatever tote color they want to. So I'm sewing the totes and making the hoops, and it takes a long time.
It's a lot of labor.
It's a lot of labor.
And so that makes it very hard to scale.
Yeah.
So what is your thinking around that? How are you going to enable yourself to make enough hoops so you can get into stores that probably require you to have a certain amount of product and so forth?
Well, the beauty is last year I went to the toy licensing show in Las Vegas because I was contacted by a licensing agent and they wanted to meet me. And so I flew down there. And I was they're part of Women in Toys as well, so, which is all women entrepreneurs in the toy industry.
It's an organization.
It's an organization. And so Jonathan and Patty Becker, they wanted to represent the hoop tote for me. And so I have an agent now, so I don't have to worry about how I'm going to manufacture the hoop part, because another product of theirs is a collapsible hoop, and they needed something to tote it around. So mine is married with their other product, and so I'm just waiting for the big deal to happen.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's very good news. So they found you.
Yeah.
How did they find you? Do you know?
I don't know. Maybe we found each other too. Serendipitous. You know, they were looking for someone who had a product like mine, and I was looking to not make the hoops by hand anymore. And it just,
But you're still making the tote by hand.
I still make the tote by hand, but, you know, I can outsource that if I wanted to.
And what would you do in that case? Who are you thinking of outsourcing to?
I like to keep everything local in Seattle.
So you'd need a stitcher or some kind of?
Yeah, like some people who make, you know, garments in the garment industry. It's the same sewing machine. And
because it's made out of some kind of web material?
Yeah, like the backpack straps. Mm-hmm. It's the same material.
So it's a similar idea?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And in terms of the licensing agent, how does that work?
So what they do is they find manufacturers to make the product. So if it's just the tote part, they'll find someone to do that. If it's the hoop part, they'll do that. If one person can do that, then so they're the ones that make the deal to find, you know, the best price for the product.
And what is their take?
A percentage. They take a percentage for doing all the work. So it leaves me I'm the inventor. I'm the creative part of it, and they're the ones that go out and market it to, you know, find a manufacturer to make it, and then market it to people, to stores, to retail.
Oh, so they take care of the not only do they take care of the manufacturer,
yeah,
but not of the actual holder itself, but just the collapsible hoop.
No, and the holder too.
Oh, they're going to actually source manufacturing for that as well.
Yeah, because the hoop is So they already have someone for the hoop.
So basically, you'll get a small piece, and they'll take care of all the business side.
That's right.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how have they been successful about getting it into retail? Oh, you haven't? Have you closed a deal with them yet? Or
no? I mean, it's a process, and it's very cyclical. Hula hooping, people don't think about it now in this weather. You know, it's a summertime thing. So, as I'm learning, because I like to do everything myself, and I get it done yesterday. And so when I have other people on my team, I get really anxious because I want things done faster. So I just have to sit back and just let it happen the way it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, patience is hard to learn when you're an entrepreneur, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Or it depends on the kind of entrepreneur you are, but I know patience is difficult.
Yeah, it is.
Because you just say, okay, we know where it's going to happen. Let's make it happen.
Right. Like, what do I need to do to make it happen? So,
yeah, but sometimes the waiting is your role. At that moment.
Yeah, the waiting. Yeah. And so, you know, whenever I get the opportunity to go down to the Emmys and sponsor, you know, I had a booth and.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You were at the Emmys.
Yeah.
Where were they held?
Well, it was in Beverly Hills. It was It was during that week of the Emmys. So it was a party beforehand, and all the celebrities will come through and giving them their.
So this is a regular kind of trade show that's held before the Emmys?
It's not a trade show, but it's like a swag party, swag bags. Like, you know, all the celebrities get things for free. And
God.
Yeah, so it's a great way.
It pays to be a celebrity, I guess. You get free hula hoops.
You get
You get free anything. So how did you get invited to present at this swag party thing?
Knowing someone who knew someone, it's all word of mouth and who you know.
So who did you know?
A friend of mine, actually, she's a famous entrepreneur too. She owns a dog feather boa company that's evolved into
Feather boas for dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She's got a patent for that. Hi, Lori. So she knew people because of what she had done in the past. And so.
But you have some celebrity connection too through your Pilates, I understand.
Pilates, yeah. I had some local celebrity clients, you know.
Who know other celebrities.
Yeah. It's once you get in there, then the people just start passing your name around.
But I'm sure our listeners want to know what is that trick for getting in. But basically, it's who you know.
It is who you know. So, and how, you know, once you, that's part of it. It's who you know. But once you get in front of these people, then how do you present yourself? And, you know, so... There's more to it than that.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, and of course you have to have a product that they're interested in buying, of course.
Yeah.
And of course, celebrities want to be able to stay in shape.
Right.
And they're going to jump on any fitness craze that keeps it interesting.
Right.
I would think.
You know, like Tori Spelling had a baby. Denise Richards, she had her babies. And who else? Liv Tyler. So
yeah,
you know,
babies are big in Hollywood.
Babies
right
are
now.
Big in Hollywood, and hula hooping is big too because it whittles down your waistline. So,
well, it burns all those calories.
It burns calories,
and as long as you don't pig out after,
and it's
you're
fun.
Good.
Yeah, I know.
Although you know, to do hula hooping for a whole hour, I think that would be pretty intense.
Yeah, I used to teach classes around town, and we wouldn't be hula hooping the whole time. You could do a whole fitness thing. Just remember to go in both directions so that your muscles don't get twisted up. So you have to balance your body and hoop in the opposite direction, which is a whole learning curve because, like, if you cross your arms, you cross it a certain way. When you hula hoop, there's a natural way that feels good on your body when you go the other way. But
who knew?
I know.
I mean, I'm thinking there could be other products you could develop based on that concept.
Right. There's always something.
Like a little reminder, like a timer that says, okay, go the other way.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I'll brainstorm right now.
Yeah. But the classes were fun. You know, we'd split them up in teams. We'd have some relays, or we would do a hoop jam where you just do whatever
you mix
you
it up.
You mix it up. So it's fun, and it's not just straight, you know.
So in your promoting your products, mm-hmm. do you – promote products during your classes, or do you hold special workshops and then promote your products? I mean,
both.
How did those help each other?
Both, and the online presence, but mostly just going to the local gyms, dance studios, and posting my flyer and getting interest that way.
So you're doing some marketing yourself, not just relying on that agent, of course, that we
had
talked about.
No, because the agent is more global. You know, they can't promote my classes just held here in Seattle.
Right. So are you building any publicity around the classes that you give to drive more people to them? Or?
Well, I'm not teaching anymore because I'm interested in the manufacturing aspect of it. And there's a handful of people that are teaching still here.
So do you try to get your product into their hands?
Yeah. Although the hula hoop, it's such a, it's interesting because a lot of people just like to make their own hoops too. So
you're really focusing more on the carrier.
Yeah.
So how are you working on getting into retail, even locally?
Well, Eight Limbs Yoga, they've got studios around town, and they carry my yoga mat carrier. So it's just approaching them and say, hey, look, I have this product. I think it's great. What do you think of it?
And so you're doing direct sales. Actually going out and pounding the pavement and getting it out there.
Yeah.
So how have you been successful at that?
Yeah.
Are people taking it up?
Yeah, so I have a couple of different yoga studios that carry my product, and I'd like to go bigger, maybe in the Fred Meyer chains or the Kroger chains or
so a local big box, you might say.
Yeah, I'd like to do that, but you know those are all corporate and they're not based here, so I'm just starting with the local businesses here, small circle, and just building that circle so it gets bigger and bigger.
Bigger and bigger. That's what we like. Yeah. That's what we're talking about here on Minding Your Business. We're talking all about how to get your products to market, in particular toys that have been reinvented, like the hula hoop and a carrier for the hula hoop made by Susan Chase, our guest today. She's got a website called Hoop Delight. And I'm Robin Block. You're listening to KKOL 1300 AM. And we hope you will call us and tell us what you think. 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block. After this, on Money Radio, 1300 KKOL.
Chamomile, lavender, lemongrass, they're not something you usually associate with a toy. But when audio engineer and mother Carrie Erickson Valenzuela was looking for a particular type of toy for her daughter a couple of years ago, she became an accidental entrepreneur. Mama Kay, as she's sometimes called, is the creator of her own line of 100% natural, gluten-free clay that comes in 7 aromatherapy scents. The product, we'll listen to it right now. That's the 5 cents in a container. The product is sold through stores in Seattle and online through an Etsy storefront. Carrie is also the recipient of an Eileen Fisher 2010 Women-Owned Business Grant awarded to socially conscious, sustainable, and innovative business owners, and many other awards. Here to share with us what she knows about introducing new products and getting them to market, Mama Kay. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me about how you came up with your idea.
It was a very organic process. I had children. I had a child at that time.
And you have more than one now?
I have two now.
Okay.
Hi, Pepper. Hi, Olympia. They're listening right now. And after the birth of my first child, I just began to realize that there were toys in the world. And
you forgot.
I had forgotten, sort of. And just noticing that a lot of things were coming into my house as gifts that didn't feel right, that felt like they were full of chemicals, that were things I wouldn't have wanted to expose my child to. And so through my search for a better mousetrap,
so to speak,
I found I had to build it myself.
But why this particular product?
Well, when playing with the Play-Doh recipe just in my kitchen at the time, it just was a natural step for me to add the aromatherapy scents. It felt like something that created a warm, pleasant environment for my child and for myself. And
you didn't like the original Play-Doh smell? I know a lot of people love that. I mean, when I was a kid, I admit it on the air right now, I used to eat the blue.
Sure, of course.
I think because it was salty. But I think I saw YouTube videos of other people doing that. So
I imagine that the scent has evolved over time with the way that they've added conditioners and petroleum products. I think that at probably the Play-Doh of the 70s is not the Play-Doh of the 2010s.
And by the way, the formula, as I read, it's still a secret.
Right. Yes, it is. Although there have been chemical analyses and, you know, speculation.
Yes, I'm sure.
What's in there. And so originally when I created the aromatherapy Play-Doh, I thought, wow, what a great idea. I think I'll offer this to some local therapists as a play therapy tool. And so after I offered it to the therapist, there...
So that was like your test market?
That was my test market. Well, that was the original idea. It was more of an art therapy tool rather than something that you would just play with at your kitchen. And so everyone loved it. But their only criticism was that it had wheat gluten in it. And a lot of people with behavioral issues are on gluten-restricted diets.
But you don't eat it. Right.
So, but you play with it and then it gets on your hands and then it gets on your face or in your mouth. You know, it migrates. And then, of course, anyone with celiac can't even really touch.
They're that sensitive.
Wheat. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you had offered this product. And right now, I mean, at that point, it wasn't really packaged or anything yet, right? You just put it in baggies or something.
Sure. A little nicer than that.
Oh, okay. But you went around and you said, hey, I have this clay.
Yeah.
Do you check it out?
Right.
And was it in different colors? Had you fixed on which scents?
I hadn't. I was using lavender and sweet orange. Those were the only scents that I had at the time.
And now you have five. I mean, why
I
did you?
Seven.
How did? Oh, you have seven.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
That's
oh, but okay. The container.
Right. So that's the
has
original.
Has five.
Yep.
Okay. So how did you decide that you needed seven? Like one for every day of the week?
No, it was an evolution. So it was I had the original five that I sort of settled on researching aromatherapy for children. And so these are five scents that are essentially safe. They don't have any negative medicinal effects, or you know, they're not hard on the skin, and
like the herbs that you're using,
right?
Not okay.
Exactly.
So, are you actually putting oils in? Is
yeah,
that the
I,
okay?
I,
that's how
yep,
it is. It's scented oil,
organic essential oils.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And so, in the beginning, it was in some kind of homemade nice package or something.
Yeah.
But tell me about how. Like right now, if I had to describe it, it looks like a little plastic 1-inch high tub
mm-hmm.
with a cap. And then it's got a stick-on label on the top. So mm-hmm. how did you decide to use this kind of packaging?
Oh.
Yeah, it was a big deal, right?
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
That was the packaging development was gut-wrenching. It was very difficult to do because you have to, for me, I wasn't willing to go offshore. So I wanted to stay here and I wanted to stay as close to Seattle as possible. So looking for a plastics manufacturer in the United States and then looking for something that was stock. So I
and
can't
the reason
afford
why you
custom.
Do that. Right, exactly.
Because I'm not ordering 50,000 of these at a time. I'm ordering 10,000 at a time.
You kind of have to go with what's available
right.
and make the best use of
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. And mm-hmm. so there was a certain point in which just box after box of package after package was arriving in my house, and I'm testing elements that, you know, I'm praying will fit together. And this, I settled on this. And so these are made in L.A., and the tubes, the paper tubes are made here in Seattle. The labels are printed in Northern
California.
Yeah,
it kind of looks like a mailing tube with a little
right.
plastic cap.
Yep.
And a metal bottom.
Yes.
Yes.
So everything's recyclable and reusable.
And our listeners can't really see the packaging label, but I think you arrived at a really interesting kind of design and branding for your materials. Can you speak to that?
Sure, absolutely. I got very lucky to be related to a graphic designer.
Related in what way?
Related.
Cousin?
Oh, boy. It's complicated.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, he is a really fabulous designer. He works for a design firm downtown, and I got lucky enough to be able to collaborate with him on the design work. And he hit it.
Can you describe it for me? I mean, how would you describe this particular look and feel?
Well, originally during our design conversations, I was looking for something that felt almost medicine show-y.
Yeah.
A show-ish?
Like an old apothecary?
Yes, like
that's
an old apothecary.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the font design comes from. And then
why do you think that apothecary approach makes a good match for the kind of product that you're offering?
Because if you are looking back through history, that period of time would have been a time where the products that were offered would have been natural products. It's before the evolution of the chemical industry and plastics as they exist today.
So I wanted to
reach back in time and sort of bring that forward. And then, of course, since the play clay is colored with natural colors, there's nothing neon about it. There's nothing bright.
Like Play-Doh.
Like Play-Doh, exactly. Yeah. And so I wanted to bring the color palette of the play clay into the design of the packaging.
So that becomes a really great positioning against the market leader.
Right.
And positions you very well to stand out on the shelf.
Right.
By being the opposite.
And that actually does work.
It's amazing how marketing actually works. We're here with Carrie Erickson Valenzuela and Susan Chase, who we'll be speaking with again soon. And you're listening to Minding Your Business, the show created for small business here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If you're wondering how to get a product into market or just planning on thinking about developing a product, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. So, Carrie, what's your sales volume like right now?
Well, let's see. It's smaller than I would like it to be.
Smaller
than a bread box. It's actually, at this point, I have about 100 retail stores, mom and pop style retail stores in the United States.
Like throughout the U.S.?
Throughout the U.S., yes.
Nice.
So they're very spread out. Several in Canada, quite a few stores in France for some reason.
Maybe the cooking connection.
Right,
the herbs.
Maybe the cooking connection.
They've always
maybe
been into
I
what
love
is
France,
that?
I don't know.
What is the French famous blend that they. Oh, Herbes de Provence.
That
will be your next.
Yes, there's lavender in that.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, so that might be your. People might really want to eat it then
right.
If it has Herbes de Provence in it.
Yeah. It's good for you anyway.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
I don't know if
know.
I'd stress that with a little kid.
No.
So your volume isn't enough from what we were talking about off the air in terms of getting it manufactured. Like right now, where is it being manufactured?
In my basement.
Yeah. Hey, you got to start somewhere,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So what kind of volume can you do?
We can actually produce quite a bit. If the workshop is up and running full time, we can produce hundreds of tubes a day. So it's not that we don't have the capacity. It's that as a one-woman show, I'm not able to create the business to support the volume that we would need to move to the next level.
It's difficult to be the inventor, the manufacturer,
the salesperson,
the marketer,
right,
the face of the company,
exactly.
Mama Kay yourself.
Exactly.
Oh, speaking of that, so I guess it's kind of obvious that you would use your own name?
Yeah.
But I don't know. A lot of people grapple with that. Should I call the company my name? Should I not? Should I come up with a new name?
Sure.
How did you make that decision?
You know, I feel like it was, this may be slightly esoteric, it was my grappling with my identity as a mother and feeling like I need to sort of own it and put it out there. And so, you know, when I became Mama Kay, it was a sort of a life evolution.
So it helped kind of confirm your role.
Yes, exactly.
So, I mean, now you have feet of clay, so to speak. Right. We've been speaking with Carrie Erickson Valenzuela, and we will be speaking again with Susan Chase of Hoop Delight. And you're listening to Minding Your Business, the show created for small business here on Money Radio, 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. And we're going to have both our guests join us for a panel discussion about developing product, what does it mean to leverage old products into new ones, and so much more here on Minding Your Business. If you have questions, you want to talk about your products, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. You can also hang out with us on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
We've been talking about making old products new again, like putting a new twist on Play-Doh and creating carriers for hula hoops. And I thought I would share with you a couple of, details about what Play-Doh is really all about and what it's achieved. Did you know that if combined, the total amount of Play-Doh manufactured since 1956 would weigh more than 700 million pounds? Or that if all the Play-Doh compound made since 1956 was extruded through the Fun Factory, it would wrap around the world nearly 300 times? There's even a National Play-Doh Day on September 16th. So interesting facts to know and love about old products and old toys that I still want to play with. We have Susan Chase here of Hoop Delight and Carrie Erickson Valenzuela of Mama K's Aromatic Play Clay. And our phones are open if you have any questions for our mompreneurs. Call 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media or visit us on Facebook. You both have built new businesses around old products, as we said, Play-Doh and hula hoops. What influence or impact has this had on your businesses?
I think that people are almost thrilled with the novelty of a new twist on an old product. I had a review at one point, actually really early on, which sort of cemented my pathway, that said, what did she say? She said, Play-Doh should be shaking in their little tubs.
I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a lot. I mean, we heard some stats at the beginning. I mean, your volume is less than a bread box.
Yes.
You're manufacturing in your basement. And somebody thought you could quake.
Yes.
Or shift Play-Doh. Hasbro.
Right.
The big toy manufacturer. You know, Play-Doh is probably just a piece of their toy line.
I'm waiting for the Hasbro hitmen to show up at my door.
I'm waiting for them to call on you and say, we want to buy you.
Yes. Well, that too.
Would that be something you'd want to do?
If they came with a suitcase, I would have to think about it. I would not say no.
And then come up with the next great product.
Right.
I mean, it really depends often if you want to be an inventor.
Yeah.
Like Susan, you've said you like being the inventor, mm-hmm. but maybe not the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Carrie, is that the same? Is that
absolutely
true for you?
At this point, I would love to have sort of birthed this product and let it go out and live its own life.
Is that because you're mommypreneurs? you like the birthing part? Or
I think so. I like the process of that. And then,
what is it about that you really enjoy, Susan?
Just all the creative juices that flow. I feel really vital at that point.
It's when you're being creative.
Yeah, it's like having a baby and, you know, growing life inside you. And so when this idea finally springs out of me and onto, you know, paper and into fabric and or into hoop or whatever, it's like that whole evolution of, I don't know.
From start to finish.
Yeah, yeah.
And the operations part is not something that turns you guys on.
No, it's labor intensive, and I have three.
Pardon the pun, yeah, of
I
course.
But, you know, I have three children, and it's hard to do everything. So there's a point where you just have to let go of some of the control.
Yeah, and some people really like that organizational part of it, mm-hmm. and they're very good at it, the operations, the day-to-day. They like being able to make sure everything gets in line, mm-hmm. which is a very different feel than being a creative. Mm-hmm. Or an inventor person. So do each of you feel you have more products in you?
It depends on if there's a need. I'm always looking at things and, oh, gosh, is there an invention for something? you know, maybe, but
they always say that filling a need is the first step in developing a new product, because you can have an idea, but if nobody has a comfortable need for that, or like an immediate need for that, so it, like an obvious one, it's just so hard to educate people to buy something they may not think they need in the first place.
It has to solve a problem.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, a solution to some problem that no one else has thought of before.
But if we think about aromatic clay, was there really a problem there?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So what do you think the problem was?
Well,
I mean, we know there weren't natural products. There weren't, we feel that Play-Doh made had chemicals or something, whatever.
Sure.
But it kind of, your product goes a little bit beyond that. It took it further. It didn't just come up with a clay that was fairly, like, you could have come up with something unscented and all natural, but adding the aroma is like a whole nother level.
Absolutely. And it creates a sort of focused playing environment that's pleasurable for whoever the caretaker is as well. I think that it just, adults like to play too.
Oh, that's true. I can't wait. I mean, I have mine right here. I'm going to take home. Susan?
Well, yeah. I mean, adults do like to play because
hula hoops,
right. It was traditionally a kid's sport. But because they're bigger, they're fancier, moms, women, usually women, but there's some men doing it too.
Well, it's the dance thing a little bit. But I also think it has that practical, like you can have fun, but it's practical too. And I think adults like toys like that. So it gets you in shape. It isn't just fun. It gets you in shape. Yeah. So, and I think with the aromatherapy, you could make the argument that there's that relaxation piece. I can see that product being used in different contexts. Absolutely.
Right.
Senior centers
Yes, there's. I have several senior centers that buy it for their seniors. And some rehabs that use it in their therapy, and hand therapists that use the chamomile especially because it's supposed to be good for your bones.
That's interesting.
There are several uses for it.
Very nice. We're here with Susan Chase of Hoop Delight and Carrie Erickson Valenzuela talking about how their products have leveraged reinventions, Play-Doh and hula hoops. We were talking about how filling a need is the first step in thinking of a new product for entrepreneurship, but I definitely think you have to go a little bit further than that. And I think, Carrie, you did by adding the aromatherapy. And just for our listeners, I think it's a matter of then finding something that differentiates it from other products already out there. So I'm wondering with you, and that really is a matter of how much competition you have. So, of course, Carrie, you're competing against many companies that make Play-Doh, and you had to find something that made it unique and positioned it against the existing products. And I'm wondering, Susan, have you found there are other, we know there are other collapsible hula hoops, but are there other holders?
No, there's no other holders for it.
None?
No, I saw a gal driving down the street, and she had the hoops. They weren't collapsed because she didn't make it that way.
On the roof of her car.
On the roof of her car. And I'm thinking, you need to have a collapsible hoop with the tote. So
too bad you couldn't, like, put a thing in your window of your car. You need to buy
one of
these.
I tried to get speed up to her, but she was in that, you know, like, three lanes over, and I just couldn't get to her. So, yeah.
We've had such a great discussion talking about Play-Doh and hula hoops, and I can't wait to go home and play with my aromatic play clay, but we're out of time already. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Susan Chase of Hoop Delight. To learn more about her collapsible hula hoop and other products, visit hoopdelight.com. That's D-E-L-I-T-E. And Carrie Erickson Valenzuela, creator of Mama K's Aromatic Play Clay. To learn more and to order her products, visit mama-ks.com. Tune in next week when we'll be speaking with someone who knows a whole lot about getting corporations to hire consultants. For an archive of today's program, links to our guest websites, or to sponsor this show, check out our website at MYB Media. Support for Minding Your Business is provided in part by Sandler Training. Learn more at toptiertraining.sandler.com. From Money Radio, KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com.
That's robin@blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.